This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Your newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. At 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, November 20th, it is nice to have you along with us today on this day in history. We cover that every morning at about 6:50, and then we carry on with the National Day Calendar as well, which we didn't have time for before. So let me get to that and tell you that today is Future Teachers of America Day. It's Education Support Professionals Day. From a food standpoint, it's Peanut Butter Fudge Day. It's World COPD Day. This is Transgender Day of Remembrance, something that started in Minneapolis, actually, in 1975, and seems somewhat appropriate that we remember all the folks who've been lost to violence against transgender people when you consider that in Congress, you have Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina trying to bully the first transgender woman elected to Congress, and trying to prohibit her from having bathroom privileges in the U.S. Capitol. Something to keep in mind as we continue decades of trying to overcome hatred and discrimination. Finally, Greg, today is International Hug a Runner Day, which, again, I would imagine you'd have to be running alongside them to hug them, and the whole thing could just end up in a big ball of limbs and gravel. So maybe hug the runner after. Yeah. After the run is over?
Yeah, I'm not running to hug them. I'll hug them when they're done, when they're wrapped in that, like, you know, potato aluminum foil cocoon.
The aluminum foil cocoon, I like that. I've never gotten one. So, I mean, are you still hugging a runner if they're not running anymore?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Get on my level. That's what I used to run a lot. I know. It doesn't look like it, but I did, and now I don't.
These are the weighty questions that we answer here on Up North News Radio. It's 34 degrees here in Chippewa Falls. You can tell Brittany's on vacation for one more day if we're tap dancing like this. It's 35 in La Crosse, 36 in Wausau, 34 in Amory, 36 in Rapids, Green Bay's at 43, Madison 41, Waukesha 37, and where Greg is at Radio Park in Racine, it is 42 degrees. Rob from Tiger's Den says, good morning. He wished Melissa a good morning from our last segment. Happy to buy her a soda a few weeks ago in Appleton. In Tigerton right now, partly cloudy and 38 degrees. He's got errands to run in Shawano today. Apparently, he's filling in for Brittany here, telling us that eastern Wisconsin could get 1 to 3 inches of snow. But it is November 20th in Wisconsin, and snow is expected. The big story here, he writes, is a 10-year-old boy from the Shawano area called 911 because he was having trouble with his math homework, and a Shawano County deputy came to his house to help him with his math problem. This is what happens in Shawano County. This is positively adorable. And really can't say enough about the deputy who, you know, just went along with it, understood that this boy needed help and helped him. So good work out of you. Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro joining us as well. Elizabeth, you've never had to call 911 to have help with your homework, I assume.
I have not. However, I think there were some times growing up where I wanted to. My uncle was a fireman, so.
Oh, nice.
Would have been nice to have the assist on a few science projects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had a guest in the last hour, and for folks who missed it, you can always catch past episodes by podcast or go to civicmedia.us. And I'm talking to this electrician about all these new jobs in school districts, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, all these clean energy jobs, talking about being an electrician for a career. And while I was in Idaho last week with my older grandson, who's 18, he's doing his senior research paper on careers, and he wants to be an electrician. I'm like, I really could have used all this information a week earlier, you know, to help him out on this. So if your relative who's a firefighter could help you out at some point, preferably not with a hose, but with knowledge, that would be just fine. How is you have not been able to take like a kind of a post-election break here, have you? I'm sure you're going to take a little time off for Thanksgiving.
Yes, hoping to take a day or two off next week. But I thought wisely, planned a big vacation for February, thinking I'll save it for a midwinter escape from the snow. I'm not so sure that was a wise decision anymore, but the vacation's booked, so we're going with it.
The things that'll be going on in February, whether it's the latest from the Trump administration or the elections here in Wisconsin, we'll get the work done around it. You just be sure to enjoy. But yeah, before and after that trip, we will be talking about the next elections in Wisconsin. And obviously, most folks, when they hear that there's elections next April, they think about state Supreme Court. You know, a few folks are aware that there will be an open seat on the state Supreme Court, and conservatives will be fighting hard for it as a chance to retake control of the state Supreme Court. But there's an almost equally large race at the state level for state superintendent of public instruction. Dr. Jill Underley is in that position right now. She is going to be running for re-election, and she has definitely not been shy about putting her marker down on what she would like to see accomplished, not only by herself as state superintendent, but what she'd like to see in the next state budget. And you've got a story about that on our website over at upnorthnewswi.com.
That's right. The last couple weeks leading up to the election, we were all focused on, I think, other things. But we can't forget that Dr. Jill Underley also started releasing her budget proposals for the next state biennial budget at the end of October. And she's proposed some what I think are maybe innovative, quote-unquote innovative, but smart proposals in which she's asking to fund our schools. And the way where she wants to fund our schools in the next biennial budget doesn't include a referendum that we've seen increasing numbers. We've talked about before on the show the number of referendums that school districts had to put on the ballot this fall. And she wants to do it without raising taxes.
Well, let's give a listen to how Dr. Underley describes how she might do that.
Because we have a surplus, we have a critical opportunity to reinvest in public education and ensure our schools have what they need to ensure our kids' success. These investments will significantly reduce the number of referendum for operating costs in local communities. We will hold down local property taxes while investing in education. It's a true win-win.
Well, I imagine that's because, look, the referendums over the course of this past year were seeking a total of $4.2 billion in what would have been increased local property taxes. And yet, there's about $4 billion sitting there in surplus that the Republican-controlled legislature did not allocate. So in this case, the math is kind of mathing on what Dr. Underley's proposing.
Exactly. And I think by my last count, the total amount that Jill Underley is asking for the Department of Public Instruction is slightly less than what that total amount of budget or referendums equated to. So just under that amount. So it seems like a little bit of a win to me.
It sure does. And look, there will definitely be Republicans in the legislature specifically who will say that surplus money could be going to instead tax cuts to decrease taxes. Well, guess what? If you're investing that in schools, you are cutting taxes. You're cutting taxes at the local property level. So like Dr. Underley says, you know, there's a win-win involved in that. Now, also, you have some audio here about school lunches and school meals and making that investment. Tell us more about that.
You know, one of the proposals that Dr. Underley has included in this budget is free school lunches or free meals for our students. And she announced this proposal at the Kenosha Unified School District a few weeks ago, And I thought it was an interesting landscape for her to be making this announcement because Kenosha Unified, you know, it's one of the largest school districts in the state. They have actually been offering free meals to their students for, this is, I believe, the second school year that they've been doing so. And they're offering students free lunches through a federal program that is available for schools and school districts that have reached a certain threshold of poverty rate. So I believe it's over 25%. And this is what the, Emily Riedler, the superintendent, or excuse me, Emily Riedler, the food service director at Kenosha Unified had to say about their experience in that federal program.
During the pandemic, we had a unique opportunity to offer free meals to all students, and the impact was immediate. Families felt relief, students had consistent access to the nutrition they needed to thrive. However, when the pandemic waivers ended in the 2022-23 school year, we returned to that traditional system where we served meals based on free, reduced, and paid status. What we heard from the families was clear. Many missed the simplicity and security of free meals for all. Too many families fall just outside the qualifying limits for free or reduced meals, but they still struggle to afford the cost.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Why is this still a thing? Why are we still talking about charging money for school lunches the way that we are? Just provide the meals the way you provide so much more in a school district. And that's why Dr. Underlie is proposing nearly $300 million to feed children. Tell us about one or two more elements of what Dr. Underlie is proposing.
Something else that I think is really interesting that she's proposing is a reimbursement for mandatory services that schools have to offer for special education programs. You know, we have to provide accommodations for special ed students. That's required by law. But most of those funds are actually going to charter schools or, you know, choice schools. Those schools that are offering special education services at the private or charter level are getting reimbursed 90% for what they're spending, and our public schools are only getting reimbursed like 30%. Now, that's actually the highest from my research that has been offered to school districts, but they're having to make up that gap somewhere for services that are required by law for them to provide.
Right. Again, just a huge gap between the more favorable treatment for voucher schools, and Dr. Underlie wants to address that. Much more to come as we follow this through the state budget. Elizabeth Montemurro, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
When we come back, hey, remember former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman? He's in trouble. Back with more after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Joe Walsh is 77 years old today. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this Wednesday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you along. If you missed it earlier from a sports note, Pat Murphy, Manager of the Year in the National League, the first ever Manager of the Year in Milwaukee Brewers history. So congratulations to him. And former Brewers catcher Stephen Vogt is Manager of the Year in the American League for guiding the Cleveland Guardians to a division title only 2 years since he was a player in the major leagues, is now the Manager of the Year. You can sign up for our daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner, and you'll see stories across Wisconsin, news stories, features, sports, more. Let's see, one of the things I'm seeing in this morning's issue is about something called refill stores or zero waste stores. These are eco-friendly shopping alternatives that cut unnecessary or wasteful packaging by storing products in large containers for shoppers to fill up their own bags and boxes and bottles and jars. Christina Laurie writes, think of them like the old school candy shops, but instead of candy in the big jars, they're filled with shampoos and soaps and more. And Christina outlines five such refill or zero waste stores around Wisconsin. That's in our newsletter. Again, sign up for that at upnorthnewswi.com. It has been a while since we have talked about former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman and his quote-unquote investigation into the 2020 presidential election. An investigation is in quotes for good reason. I mean, even one of the judges that was overseeing one of the many lawsuits over Gableman's work said that it would really be, you have to work hard to call it an investigation. It was a sideshow. It was a performance. It was a circus where this boisterous bully tried to intimidate local officials and did advance numerous conspiracy theories about the 2020 election without finding anything. He found nothing. All he did was end up costing Wisconsin taxpayers about $2.5 million, not just for his quote-unquote investigation, but the lawsuits that followed because he did not follow the law when it came to maintaining records of his work. He was in violation of the open records law. Well, between that and his conduct and apparently being less than truthful in some of his reporting, he is now facing the potential for discipline by the Wisconsin Office of Lawyer Regulation. These judicial regulators, filed a disciplinary complaint on Tuesday against Gableman, a 10-count complaint that accuses him of violations that could result in a variety of sanctions, including possibly losing his law license. The complaint does not make a specific recommendation about what sanction the Wisconsin Supreme Court would ultimately apply. But at the time, you know, when Gableman was doing this work, he is now accused of making false statements, disputing a court hearing, questioning a judge's integrity, making derogatory remarks about opposing counsel, violating open records law, and revealing information about Assembly Speaker Robin Voss as part of the investigation, while Gableman was later trying to promote an effort to recall Voss from office. Let me back up a few steps on this. Okay, in the wake of the 2020 presidential election, when Joe Biden won, and there was no shortage of conspiracy theories and other lies that were out there, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, a few months later, announced that there would be this investigation, and it would be led by a former state Supreme Court Justice, Michael Gableman. Well, it'd be one thing if he introduced that at the state capitol in, say, some kind of a news conference. But he didn't do that. He introduced Gableman, and he announced this investigation at the Republican State Convention in 2021 to, of course, thunderous applause. And Gableman, from the get-go, nothing impartial about this guy, said, you know, that there were these problems. We're going to get to the root of these problems. And then he was like Inspector Clouseau in the Pink Panther movies of the 1970s, just fumbling, bumbling, stumbling, making all kinds of mistakes, basically bull in a china shop type of conduct. And for it all, he ended up being sued a few times over his conduct, over his open record, lack of open records. And now he faces these sanctions as well. None of this should have happened. None of a lot of this should have happened and would not have happened if more Republicans had the backbone to stand up after the 2020 election, stand up to Donald Trump and say, there's no there. There's no fraud. There's nothing irregular. You lost. Thank you for your service. We've got to move on. But instead, people continued to go along with it, including Assembly Speaker Voss, who announced this investigation. Later, when it was quite clear that Gabelman was finding nothing and was actually causing more trouble than he was worth, Voss fired him, said there is no more investigation. And Gabelman thanked Voss by joining the effort to have Voss recalled from office, again, costing more money. So now we have, because of his conduct and everything that has been reported about Gabelman from during his, you know, so-called investigation, you now have this 10-count complaint that's going to be coming up, put forward by the Office of Lawyer Regulation. And ultimately, the Wisconsin Supreme Court could make some kind of sanctions here against Michael Gabelman. It is simply worth noting, the record is clear on Gabelman. And as I have said about the fake electors, and as I've said about the Wausau mayor moving a drop box, essentially, you know, stealing a drop box for a time, these sanctions can't be minor. There has to be a message sent that if you're going to investigate something, you're going to be impartial and let the facts come where they may, that you're going to follow the law while you're doing your investigation and taking your actions or following up after an election. If you can't do that, the sanctions should be punishing to send a message that this cannot happen again. Our homeroom segment with author Laura Burt is coming up next. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Okay, no, this isn't actually Reading Rainbow, but pretty close. We're going to talk to author Laura Burt in just a moment here. First, from the mailbag on our text line at 855-75-CIVIC from Len in Madison. It is important to have some optimism and hope, especially for the next 4 years. The Trump presidency will have a lot in common with a high-fiber meal. This, too, shall pass. Thank you, Len. Len concludes, we hope everything comes out all right. So thank you very much for that. Looking ahead to what you can find across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Wednesday, on the Earl Ingram Show, on many of these stations, there will be a conversation about getting the lead out of our fresh water. At 9 o'clock, Earl will have Dr. Robert Craig from Citizen Action. Matt and Air on Air will have their weekly public cervix announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. The Todd Alba Show, I'll be on there with Trigvi Olson starting at 12:05. Dan Schaefer is guest hosting the Maggie Dawn Show coming up at 2 o'clock, and his guests include Kate Duffy from Motherhood for Good. On the Dom Salvia Show at 4 o'clock, Matt Rothschild will be the co-host. And on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, the Overture Center in Madison's Tim Sowers will be a guest. So keep that radio right across the Civic Media Radio Network throughout the course of the day and learn more at civicmedia.us. While folks like me head back over to Up North News, and you can follow our work at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, time for our Wednesday homeroom segment, where normally we're talking about schools and public education. Obviously, we've had a lot to say about that leading up to the election with all the referendums. We talked to Elizabeth Montemurro in our last half hour about Dr. Jill Underle running for a second term as state superintendent and what she would like to see in the state budget to help our public schools. But for this segment, we thought we'd go more into the area of literature and books, especially for you know, a niche audience like middle schoolers, for example. And so author Laura Ann Bird joins us now to talk more about, you know, what she's written, the importance of writing, you know, for an audience like that of middle schoolers, and more about, you know, especially being a book author in this day and age. Laura Bird, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Pat, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell us a little bit about your background. What you know, what led you to start writing you know, children's books, middle school books, and you know, what would folks know you for a particular book or issue?
Sure. Well, gosh, that's a lot of questions in one. I'll start, I guess, with the fact that when I grew up, I was a voracious reader, and my parents read to me every night, and they let me wander through the stacks of the Wauwatosa Public Library, where I could choose whatever books I wanted and assemble these amazing stacks, and we read really widely. And I knew from a very young age that books meant more to me than almost anything, and I wanted to write for kids someday when I grew up. So I went to college and I majored in English, and then I got married and adopted three kids. And my life kind of revolved around being a mother for many years. But as my kids have gotten older, you know, they're 20, 20, and 17 now, I finally have kind of the bandwidth to focus on writing. And I've written two middle grade novels, as you mentioned. And a middle grade audience technically is 8 to 12-year-olds, 8 to 13-year-olds. That's going to depend on, you know, the reading ability of a child and or the willingness of a grown-up to read out loud to them. So I highly recommend that. And although my books are geared towards children, I do think it's worth mentioning that a lot of adults have really loved my books also. And I think that speaks to middle grade fiction and why it's so powerful. There's sort of an eternal quality to it, a universality to it, that I think really speaks to adults too. So my first book came out in March of 2022, and it's called Crossing the Pressure Line. And my second book just came out a month or two ago called Marvelous Jackson. So I can tell you more about those books. Yeah. I don't know what.
Well, let's first, I know you wouldn't necessarily mention it. So let me mention that Crossing the Pressure Line won awards from the Independent Book Publishers Association, the Midwest Independent Publishers Association, and the Arts and Literature Laboratory. So I guess I'm really not surprised that there would be a follow-up. So can you give us a couple of quick thumbnails on Crossing the Pressure Line, and then how Marvelous Jackson follows up to that?
So that's a great question. So my two books are considered standalone companion stories, which means they're loosely connected and you see a lot of the same characters from one book to the other, but you don't actually have to read one to understand or appreciate the other. So I think it's important to mention that. So Crossing the Pressure Line, my first book, centers on a 12-year-old girl, Claire Birch. She lives in Chicago. And she suddenly has to upend all of her summertime plans so that she can honor a very special request made by her late grandfather. And that entails heading to the Northwoods of Wisconsin for an entire summer with her mother and her grandmother and their little wiener dog, Roger, where Claire has an incredible coming of age season that really stretches her comfort zone in unexpected ways. And I think it's the perfect book for kids who love animals, the outdoors, fishing, swimming. I do have to say fishing plays a huge part in the book. Let's just say that Claire sets out to catch a muskie in honor of her late grandfather, and that plays a huge part in the plot. So Jack Wilson is actually a side character in Crossing the Pressure Line, and he kind of gives everybody a headache. He rides around on his dirt bike all summer, kind of stirring up trouble. And as I was writing Crossing the Pressure Line, I knew that I wanted Jack to be the main character of whatever book would come next, hence Marvelous Jackson. So in Marvelous Jackson, we focus on 13-year-old Jack, and he also is dealing with some loss. He's lost his mother, but my books, I swear, they aren't depressing. I just need to mention that.
Not a Disney situation. There's not going to be a dead parent in every one of the books moving forward?
There is a little Disney element there, but they're really upbeat and uplifting. I swear they're really fun to read.
Okay.
But anyway, Jack has way too much free time on his hands, and he needs to get himself a hobby and get himself on the right path pronto, or his dad is going to send him off to boarding school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I just need to say, I love the UP. I am not anti-UP. But when you're not an outdoor kid and you're, you know, faced with the possibility of being shipped off to the Davy Crockett Institute of Outdoor Learning, you need to change your ways. So that's Jack's story. In a nutshell, he rediscovers the love of baking that he shared with his mom when she was alive and when he was a little boy. And that kind of brings him a new sense of hope and purpose.
Nice. So what, but before I forget, for folks that want to learn more about the books, would you send them to the publisher, orangehatpublishing.com?
You absolutely could go to Orange Hat. And I love Orange Hat because they are based in Wisconsin. They do a great job elevating Midwestern authors. I can't recommend them enough. So if you go to their website, they have, you know, all the books for sale. You can go to my website, which is laurabirdbooks.com. You can shop at your local independent store, of which Wisconsin has many. It's really important to support those businesses. You can also, if you prefer to shop online, go to bookshop.org and you can order there and they can ship right to your door.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we got that out there because I didn't want to forget at the end of the interview here. But so let's come back to why middle grade fiction seems to be your sweet spot. How did you come to find out that that's where you enjoy writing most?
I love that 8 to 12 year old age range. So much is happening developmentally to kids during that stage. And if you've raised kids, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're really starting to figure out who and what and how they want to be in the world. And that's a tricky time because there are sometimes some conflicting values that take place. You know, you have a kid who really wants their independence and doesn't want mom and dad around. But at the same time, like at the end of the day, they really want their parents to come in and give them a kiss before they go to bed. Or kids really want to be different and stand out from the crowd. But really, you still really want some close, good friends so that you feel like you belong somewhere. So these conflicting values, I think, in real life can be very furious and cause a lot of angst. And I say that, of course, as the mother of three, mm-hmm. because I've been there, done that. But I think they make for incredible fiction. And I just want kids that age, you know, no matter what they're dealing with, whether they feel like they don't fit in, they don't look like everybody else, they don't have what everyone else has, I want them to be able to open up my books and say, wow, I'm not alone. There are other kids that are just like me.
And you do so much more than simply write these books. You celebrate books in so many different ways. You're an ambassador for the Wisconsin Book Festival, which has hosted more than 900 authors over the past 10 years. You're a board member for the Madison Public Library Foundation, co-chaired Lunch for Libraries. You co-founded the Great Midwest Book Group, which meets quarterly on Zoom to discuss authors and books that celebrate our region. And really what I bring all this up to say that in a lot of our segments about education, we talk about getting more involved, that the folks should get involved more than when they simply show up at a school board meeting to complain about something which might be based on a rumor for all we know. You know, get involved more often. And if you, whether it's education or young adult literature, I've already outlined several different ways that people can increase their involvement and as well as increase their love of learning and their love of books.
Right. I'm so glad you brought that up because to me, that's what being a good literary citizen is all about. And I use that term a lot. I'm a literary citizen. What does that mean? For me right now, just over the last few weeks, I have felt very dejected and very hopeless, like I'm sure a lot of people have. But I know that one way I can make a difference is by recommitting to being a good literary citizen. And what does that mean? Well, to me, it means, and I know people might not want to hear this, it means first of all, putting down a screen, turning off your TV, and actually reading a book. Books connect us in profound ways. They give us access to other people's perspectives and thoughts. It's really hard to other people when you're actually able to climb inside their brains and their minds and their experiences. So I can't recommend reading enough. It increases empathy, it increases compassion, and that's really what we all need right now is more of that. But even more than that, I think celebrating books, celebrating authors, celebrating access to books and authors, posting reviews about books. Go online, post a review after you've read a book. It helps authors so much. And also, I think, particularly right now, is really committing to elevating voices of marginalized authors, especially BIPOC authors, LGBTQ plus authors, because those are historically marginalized voices. And I don't know what's going to happen down the road, you know, with Project 2025 around book banning, but I suspect that those are the voices that are going to be increasingly targeted. So it's really important that we lift them up and read them. If you have a little free library close to you, you know, those cute little libraries that are in front of houses and on sidewalks, stock that little free library, put some good books in there, especially banned books and books yes. by those marginalized authors.
Yeah. And that's something that I want to get into in a future visit with you about banned books and, you know, the nature of them, what, you know, why they are like they are. They're just because they're not somebody's cup of tea and yet other people celebrate them, there might be a reason to learn more about that. So we're going to talk more in a future visit about your work highlighting books that have otherwise been banned. And then I also like the fact that one of the things you like to do is add to people's TBR stack, the to-be-read stack. I'm just going to I happen to have mine right here. It'd be these four books right here.
Oh, Pat, that's a nice stack.
Thank you. Including, I'm eventually going to finish Robert K. Rowe's The Power Broker. I swear to God I am, but it's going to take a little while. But everybody's always, not everybody, but so many people are always looking for that next recommendation, and you love playing that role.
Yes. Finding the perfect book for a person is my personal joy. I love doing it. Follow me on Instagram if you want. I'm Laura at the Library. I have underscores between each of my names there. And I post book recommendations all the time. And I only post books that I've read and vetted.
Laura at the Library. Mm-hmm. I was going to type that all up on screen, but I'm running out of time into the break. We're going to do this in a future conversation because there, again, is just so much more we can learn. Laura Ann Bird, thank you again so much for visiting with us. I know we're going to have more conversations and just get more folks reading in the new year. Thanks again.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. When we come back, Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will join us next. You're up north.
I can go twice as high. Take a look. It's in a book.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
One more from birthday boy Dierks Bentley before we wrap things up on a Wednesday. I always like... The thing I like most about this segment is occasionally you find a song where it's not just the snippet. You want to listen to it all the way through. With Dierks Bentley, that would be the song What Was I Thinking? is a great one to play. So look that one up for your listening pleasure today. Todd Alba joins us now from the Todd Alba Show. You can catch him at noon all across the Civic Media Radio Network. With or without Pat Kreitlow today with at 12:06. Apologies in advance. Mr. Alba, how are you?
Thank goodness Pat Kreitlow is back this week. We've gotten texts and emails and
there was rioting in the street.
Pining. Oh, yeah. Just pining for him. Yes. No, nothing.
Hashtag pining for Pat.
Yes. Hashtag. I like that. I've never been a hashtag before. We are, as I've said before, still going through kind of the carousel of people who are on or off post-election. Everybody kind of needs it. Frankly, the whole nation needs it. Everybody's been, I mean, ratings for the cable channels have plunged because people don't really want to be ingesting news right now. Can't say as I blame them. I have not put on... much for news, especially last week while I was gone. I sometimes will have MSNBC on, and I'll have Joe and Mika on at 5 a.m. when they start their Morning Joe program. Mm. I didn't have it on this Monday. I just was not ready to plug back in yet. I find out later, looking through the interwebs, that they started that Monday morning show saying, well, we went to Mar-a-Lago and we went to meet with Donald Trump and we think it's time to open up a new chapter. And my immediate reaction was, well, I guess I don't have to worry about turning them on anymore, you know, at 5 a.m.
This constantly, we need to be nice and get along.
No, You don't need to when you've got something that, if you've been comparing somebody to some of the darkest figures in our history, and if you still believe that he's capable of that, then shouldn't you, Todd, instead be looking for ways to essentially gird yourself for the battles to come rather than simply, you know, bending the knee?
You kind of think, I mean, we talked a little bit about on this, our show, during the week, and I was certainly disappointed. I've been a fan of Morning Joe, and I don't watch it regularly, but I watch it often. And I agree with you. I mean, I think that for those of us, myself included, who said, you know, that the democracy is at stake in this election, that these are certainly authoritarian things he's putting out there. I think he could be a dictator. If you believe that, and if Joe and Mika believed it, look, I'm really trying to be self-reflective post-election. I want to talk and listen to voters who voted for Donald Trump. I want to hear their perspective. I don't have an interest in going to Mar-a-Lago and hearing Donald, unless he actually wanted to do, I guess, an on-air interview and I'm going to ask him anything I wanted. Okay, maybe I consider that. But to just go there and hold hands and have tea and genuflect, I think they lose credibility. And I'm not sure if you guys saw this, but overnight or late yesterday afternoon, NBC Universal announced that they're spinning off MSNBC and CNBC into a completely different corporation, separating it out from NBC Universal. I just think that Joe and Mika are concerned, I'll use maybe the word afraid, that they're going to be investigated, maybe not jailed, but the retribution
harassed
is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Harassed, you know, which again, they say is what was done to Donald Trump. Others would call that, you know, justice. Like right. if you're going to commit crimes, you're going to be investigated. But this really gets to the crux of the challenge, not just for the big cable channels, but for folks like you and me and Civic Media and Up North News. And it's this. And this is out of an NBC poll, coincidentally. Of those who said they follow politics closely, Vice President Kamala Harris was their choice by 5%. She had a 5-point winning margin among people who follow politics closely. Among people who, by their own admission, say they do not follow politics closely, they went for Donald Trump by 14 points. Yeah. And there's the rub. We can talk, we can preach to the choir all day long. But how do you reach people who don't follow politics closely, but clearly hear just enough from a Joe Rogan or a Fox News or a neighbor down the street who does follow Fox News? And you know, that's the thing, that's the atom I feel like so many pundits are trying to split these past couple of weeks.
I agree. And I also think in our local news channel, one of our local TV stations here in Madison, they had a story on Eric Hovde's concession speech, or not speech, but his video.
Six-minute video.
and they repeated his lines in the video, which are false, untrue claims about election problems in Milwaukee, which of course were disproven. Even Ron Johnson said there were no problems. But this local station repeated those claims and never added the tagline, which were disproven. And you know, it was one story, but you've worked in local news, you know, more than I have, Pat. I have to start wondering whether some of these stations, some of which are owned by Sinclair, which a lot of listeners or viewers aren't going to know what that means. They're a right-wing or right-leaning mega corporation. Are these local stations now going also afraid of retribution, going to start spinning the news a certain way? And I think it's just incumbent upon people. Mark Jacobs has been on your show. I think he does such a great job of really being looking through what this means.
Yeah, and it's something we need to continue to look at in terms of what will happen with a Trump administration. But again, also looking ahead to future elections, how do you get certain messages to voters, if not directly, then through the people who are listeners to shows like yours, which you will catch again at noon today across
the key is to be entertaining, and I want to.
Oh well, then we're
from that last segment saying Pat is well stacked. I thought that was great. That was more entertainment, more an experience.
Nice stack.
That's what you need. Nice. That's what you need.
Thank you, Todd. I'm shutting your mic off now. All right. Greg Bach will be back for Matt and Air on Air coming up at 10 o'clock. Our thanks to today's guests, and hope you'll be back with us tomorrow as well. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Enjoy your Wednesday. Knock it off, Alba. See you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.